Ever consider a career in podcasting? You want to make your own podcast? In August 2018, a new one-year audio podcast fellows program will be launched at Stony Brook, Southampton, in association with WSHU Public Radio. The first in the U.S., this audio podcast program will offer 12 students advanced training in all aspects of podcasting, while they, the students, develop their own podcasts. Applications are now being accepted at... write this down, www.stonybrook.edu/Southampton/MFA/podcast. That is one long URL. Let me do it again. stonybrook.edu/Southampton/MFA/podcast/ do it now. That last slash doesn't work. Welcome to The Wolf Den. This is the podcast about the business and the people of podcasting. I'm Chris Bannon. My colleague Lex Friedman is on his luxury yacht, the SS Podcast Monetization, this week. So I'm going solo and attempting to fill those giant, well, they're size 10 shoes. Before I get to my guest this week, someone I'm very excited to talk to, I wanted to first say that I don't have a show I'm jealous of, and that's because I've been listening to too many things we have in our pipeline here. And I will catch up to what the rest of the world is doing, I swear, but this week I didn't have anything. So my guest, on the other hand, is someone who listens to all kinds of things in addition to being a highly creative podcast veteran. It's Gina Delvac. She is the producer of Call Your Girlfriend. She's had an amazing career in all corners of both public radio and podcasting, and I'm excited to talk to her. Gina, before we get to your actual life story, is there a show that you're jealous of? Can you make up for the absence of thought that I put into today's show?
Hey, Chris, I have a few. One is a new show from KPCC called Repeat that you might have heard about. It is another, I won't say it's another true crime story exactly. It is looking into the LA Sheriff's Department and a case of one officer who, in the digging by investigative reporter Annie Gilbertson and with the backup of producer Arwin Nix, they found was involved in multiple firing shootings of unarmed suspects in South LA. And I live in Southern California. I grew up here. And so it's also just a fascinating look at, I think those of us who've paid attention to media coverage of law enforcement know a lot about the LAPD, the consent decree, what happened after Rodney King. But there's also this huge county apparatus. And so at the same time that we were having this abuse of inmate scandals in the jails, also controlled by the LA Sheriff's Department, there was this example of this rogue officer who's out there kind of on a spree, you might say. And so the way that they're digging into both the personal stories and then illuminating the way our region works has been really rad. And I know and respect both of those, the both producer and reporter, so much. So I'm also just stoked to see my pals making great work.
That sounds amazing. And I want to ask you, are they making the show in real time as they're releasing it week by week, or have they made the whole series already?
I don't know. I suspect it's mostly done and that they're tweaking, because I know they have a really active Facebook group and people are, I think, you know, there's a sense now that when you bring up these little covered cases into the public sphere, like we saw the Reddit effect around Serial, there are likely to be those internet investigator types who are like, I'm going to find the real story.
Right.
So I think they left a little bit of room for those kinds of theories and stuff that emerges from the fan base.
So it's called Repeat, and it's from KPCC.
Yes. Yeah, which is our local public radio station here.
Yes, and I think you have a deeper connection to KPCC, right? You segued right into my first question, which is, tell me how you got your start. I think it's connected to that great Los Angeles public radio station.
It is. I started in audio as a public radio producer, I think like a lot of the folks that you talk to here. And I was an intern at KPCC working on their morning talk show, Air Talk, 2 hours of live radio every day of the working week. And that was a complete by accident kind of thing. I had no idea. I still don't know what I want to be when I grow up, but yeah. I really didn't know after college, and got connected, luckily, to Linda Othen and Gerard, who was then the longtime producer of Air Talk. And so I had always wanted to see a radio station from the time I was a kid.
We were just supposed to be inside on a field one? Trip. Just to, you just wanted
yeah.
to, yeah. Okay,
it's
that's
kind
not
of
weird.
Mythic space, right?
Well, yeah, because you only get the little, you get the speaker end of it, right? As a kid, you never get to, you don't know where the voices come from.
I wanted to go through the looking glass, totally.
Yeah.
And so, or the listening glass, I guess. anyway, bad joke, cut that. Harry, cut that.
wait, anyway, I tell so, Harry what to cut here. This is my show.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay.
Sorry.
Harry, cut that.
Okay. Okay. Love you, Harry. Don't cut it.
Can I ask you
cut
what?
Whatever you want.
What do you like? In having?
Do you have a clean ending on that?
Oh, clean endings are not found in this show, I'm afraid. Mostly.
Okay, great.
Can I ask you what you learned in that internship, or what was the most valuable thing about it in terms of where it led you? Because there are people who are trying to find their way into podcasting, and you know, internships seem like the thing people have to do now, but I don't know that they're always super valuable.
Yeah, I was really lucky because there was so much subject matter on a two-hour talk show like that, that I had always been a generalist and wasn't sure how to figure out what my ultimate passion might be. And so this environment in which you're trying to create a lot of content in as short a time as possible and just essentially being on and in the moment and able to respond to news, mm-hmm. I found that there were all these personality traits and skill sets that I had that had an application. And so in the sense of finding, oh, this is maybe a path I can follow, not being sure in advance that I would want to, it was the perfect example of an internship. I think in what we think of the like 80s, 90s sense, right? Of internship as career path discovery, where you get to hang out a couple weeks and find out what you like. Mm-hmm. In terms of getting later into podcasting and specific skills, I got to do so much booking. I got to do all kinds of research into topics I didn't necessarily know much about. I really got that initial handle that a lot of people who've worked in newsrooms get around who are the subject experts in 20 different areas that you yeah. can turn to on short notice. Who's a good talker? Who's over-talked? All these things that kind of help you if you try and move newsrooms or are just really trying to yeah. get a lay of land of how you put a broadcast together on short notice.
Live radio is really merciless, right? You have to be able to do
oh,
those
yeah.
things. Yeah. And you will,
oh, yeah.
your failure will be happening live in front of your own eyes in the ears of all
oh,
your
yeah.
listeners. Yeah. So how did yeah. you turn an internship at KPCC into this fabulous career as one of the, I think you're one of the founding components of Call Your Girlfriend, this amazing show.
Yeah.
What was the Thanks. Path to Call Your Girlfriend?
It's much more winding than it will sound if I tell it in like a pat bio or something.
Yeah.
I would say I'm also like a kid of the recession in a really extreme way. I graduated from a private college, Haverford College, shout out, in 2008 that no one I had grown up with in Southern California had ever heard of.
Yeah.
It's like a community college. It's not. It's a great place. You should go there.
I almost went there just as a sidebar.
Really?
Yeah, but the food was so awful when I went there.
It got a little bit better.
Okay. Well, it was true.
Yeah.
It was 100 years ago when I went, so.
Yeah.
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 But so you came from Haverford, you went to Haverford and—
Yeah. And I graduated in 2008 with a degree in comparative literature and no idea what I wanted to do for a job. So that was great. And
yeah,
so that's just totally normal. So I worked that internship for longer than I think is legally allowed now at KPCC since mm-hmm. they unionized their newsroom. I was there for about a year and a half between kind of this intern temp work that I did. And then later got opportunities to start filling in at Marketplace, which was another great experience in leveling up my skill set, especially on the editing, cutting tape side of things
yeah.
and really turning stuff around quickly. But I always caution people I talk to who are just looking to enter podcasting now, because I sort of don't know how replicable my path was. Partly
Why?
Because, well, I was able to live with my mom, so I had a level of support and resources that lots of people don't necessarily have. And I think it was a time where public radio was like just kind of getting hipster cool again, right? We didn't really
Right.
have podcasting yet. And so I think people weren't as clear on what it was to be a producer. And so it was, you know, there were, it was competitive, but there were more opportunities. And I think now, I think younger people are just so much clearer on what they're looking for and figure out the path to get there.
Yeah, an industry exists now that really didn't exist 8 or 9 years ago. There are jobs,
true.
Right? There are,
yeah, that's
you can
true.
See it in front of you every day. So did you come into this period of your career having an idea of what kind of work you wanted to do, or was it more haphazard than that?
Any friend who might be listening to this knows I'm not necessarily like a, here's like a 12-page sheet of my goals and where I'll be in 10 years. It was much more the feeling things out, exactly that thing that appealed to me about live radio, of being in the moment and what's next and just being mm-hmm. present for the joy or the catastrophe. I think at that stage in particular, I was just focused on making what felt like a respectable amount of money, by which I mean enough to pay
enough.
Rent and not live with my mom anymore.
Yeah.
Not talking about supporting a family, just paying for my own life in an expensive major city. So that was the goal then. And also just to get more skills and to really kind of dig more deeply into these stories. And so another great thing about Marketplace was I got to learn a beat in a way that I hadn't in that kind of general crush of covering local news.
Well, let's talk about Marketplace briefly. You graduated in 2008. When did you land there with an actual full-time job?
I never had a full-time job there. So I started temping there in 2011.
Okay.
And went kind of permalance there for what was supposed to be a 2-week gig and just kind of getting trained. They needed some more help. You know, everyone needs the help of kind of folks you can call in.
I permalanced for a while. How did that feel?
At first, I think I was, you know, looking like many people do to try and get that staff position to move mm-hmm. up, to really show everyone what I was made of. And over time, I came to really enjoy the flexibility of it. It kind of meant I only worked when I wanted to work, and it left me room and creative time to inculcate things like the ideas that became Call Your Girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
So initially, it was challenging. I think like many people who are in that, I'm just past my entry-level step, but how do I get to intermediate? I was just kind of like hustling and working on building my skills and really stoked to get to tell the stories that I was getting to tell on the scale that I was, even if it was kind of being a small part of a big operation.
Right. And so you're working there, you're a permalancer. Tell us about the genesis of Call Your Girlfriend.
Yeah. So a little bit after that, I got hired onto this tech podcast called This Week in Startups, which is hosted by a, angel investor and now kind of more of a VC, Jason Calacanis, who runs the Launch Festival up in San Francisco.
Very well known. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So he had been doing this podcast for, I think he had over 200 episodes when I came in. And so they were looking to professionalize a little bit. And so I had been working on that twice a week show and booking it and doing really everything top to bottom on that, and was spending so much time. It's relevant to CYG because I was spending so much time around entrepreneurs that I had was able to break out of some of the constraints that I think public radio and journalism rightly inculcate.
Yeah, I want to hear what those are. Yeah.
I think they're a certain kind of temperance, a certain kind of deference, a certain kind of skepticism and gathering of all the facts, right? The things that you think about being a methodical journalist,
mm-hmm.
And also working within a fairly regulated industry, right? There are words you can't say on the air, that you can't make specific product endorsements. And so to suddenly be in this kind of very Wild West
capitalism. Well, yeah, you have
capitalism.
A clock, right? You have a clock in radio. You don't have any clock in podcasting.
No, indeed. And also then to leave a nonprofit space and go into a really kind of venturesome for-profit space, the kind of folks I was interacting with on the show had so much drive, so much ambition, all these big ideas, and we're starting things from zero, right? And that it was that level of self-conviction that makes so many, especially startups, have any chance, right? You know,
right. It's
and we
half
could decry
delusion,
that.
Right? Half delusion sometimes, at least.
It can be.
Yeah.
It can be. But it takes that kind of fierceness of belief to even have a shot at doing it, right? Mm-hmm. And so spending so much time around those folks, and then here, you know, I was spending a lot of time with my co-founders, Aminatou So and Anne Friedman. They'd been tossing back around this idea of doing a podcast forever. And here I'm thinking, you know, here are two brilliant, funny, well-informed women who have all of these really edgy opinions at times, but are also like so loving with one another. It just was like a perfect co-host situation. And so, yeah. And so I was, when we started talking about it, it was like, I had that fuel, that entrepreneurial kind of gusto behind me, like a little chutzpah.
And so, so tell me what the elevator pitch is for listeners. We'll put a clip in a minute or two of the show so people can hear it for themselves.
Okay.
But first tell me how you define what Call Your Girlfriend either started out to be and has become, or what it has always been in its essence.
I mean, our tagline, I think, it's a podcast for long-distance besties everywhere, and that's absolutely true. The community that has grown around our show, a lot of the folks are typically women, best friends. A lot of our listeners, we think, are in college, fresh out of college. I'm on inbox duty this month, and we have quite a few folks who are telling us stuff like, almost like, I grew up listening to you, right?
Or, oh my God,
I started listening to your show my first semester of college, and I'm about to graduate, you know? So that, to be along in that journey in a person, and especially a young woman's life, has been really powerful. So there are folks who are, yeah, but so back to the elevator pitch.
it could be a long elevator ride. We might be on the 44th floor by now.
I know. Yeah, I know. I usually get final cut on myself, so my digressions are, you know.
It's a really, like, when you're moving, actually is a really good time to do an audit of what having friends means to you, you know, because there's in the sense that, like, you know, there are people that I haven't lived next to in years that they're my friends. Like, you're one of those people.
Hello, raising my hand.
Right? You know what I mean? Where I'm like, okay, like, these people are friends, like, tried and true. And like, we'll figure it out. But like, I had really underestimated how much day-to-day like FaceTime I needed in friendly situations.
Ah.
I was just like, oh, like I have all these really great friends. I don't really have too much time for like new friends or whatever. I was very much on my Drake, like, no new friends mode at one point. And then I remember like one day just looking at my apartment and being like, oh, I'm lonely. Like, is this the feeling of being lonely?
And I was
very much taken aback by it, right? And then, but you know, I'm a proactive bitch. So I went on my phone and I was literally like, who do I know in San Francisco? And texted every single person, like, you up? What are you doing? Do you want to go to a thing? And I remember, like, you know, and it was so desperate. It was so like, oh my God. And also, like, every city kind of has a vibe, right? Like, there are places where, like, if you want to hang out with people, you got to give them 72 hours notice. there are places where people are like, yeah, I'm coming over right now. Like, that's all to be negotiated. But then, like, somebody who I didn't know very well, like, texted me back and she's like, oh, I'm in this place. And I was like, I'm coming over. And we, like, ended up having a delightful day. But I really remember that, where I was like, wow, I really thought I was going to do this, like, solo thing for a while until I, like, found my community and then I could, like, have my, like, built-in dinner parties or whatever. And it was such a humbling, like, reminder that actually, like, if you don't want to be alone, you got to do, like, a lot of the heavy lifting.
Oh, my God. Yeah. It's kind of like when you are new in town, there is no option but proactive bitch. Like, that is, like, the default.
I'm really curious, like, how did you think there would be a community around it from the beginning? I mean, one of the things I always try to encourage, you know, our hosts to do is to think about the communities, and some have time and, you know, immediately see, oh, who are these people who will be listening? But I'm not sure it's always evident to people, you know, as they start to think about a show and what to make. How did you understand a community would exist around this?
So, short answer is, initially we thought it would pretty much be only our friends listening, and it seemed really fun to do. Mm-hmm. Amina and Anne had also collaborated on these kinds of passion projects before, you know, fashion blogs, little tumblers. So there was a component to their friendship that existed in that maker space that was having a sensibility, but not necessarily being too concerned about how big the audience might get or of it being a profitable venture at the outset. And keep in mind, this is 2014, you know, that we launched. So this is a different podcasting world, totally different era, I would say. And then in terms of the audience, it became very quickly clear because we were podcast listeners and we were really bored by the number of, to be candid, like white dude bro shows that seemed to be the things that dominated the charts, that were what were featured on iTunes. Like that was kind of what was available. And so I think, you know, in a way, we were one of the early two women talking shows. And I think that that in of itself was really powerful for certain listeners just to have that minimum sense of representation in this medium.
That's right. I do think you were way early and, you know, congratulations on the achievement of realizing that community. I need to take a short break here, but I want to come back. And then if it's okay with you, I want to talk a little bit about Shine Theory and what that really means for the show and for the way you Amina and Anne approach your work. But can you hang on for a minute while I do the inevitable ad?
Yeah, you bet. Go for it.
Okay. Want to grow your business but aren't really sure how? Well, start by building meaningful relationships with your current customers and learning how to identify new ones. How do you do that? I'd like to tell you about ACT. ACT has been trusted by small businesses for over 30 years, and it grows your business by making every customer interaction count. It maintains customer information in a single place for quick access, whether you're in the office or on the go. And it drives new sales with powerful email marketing to help you close deals faster. Do you want innovation? ACT is the first in the industry to launch voice-activated technology that allows you to interact with Amazon Alexa through simple voice commands. ACT does all of this and more for as little as $1 a day. Try ACT today. Go to act.com for a free trial, or you can call 888-643-6400. Mention this podcast for a free Amazon Echo Dot with any new subscription. You can see the details online. That's 888-643-6400 to grow your business this year with ACT. 888-643-6400 or visit act.com. ACT. Marvel is unveiling their first scripted podcast ever, and it's available exclusively on Stitcher Premium. In Wolverine, The Long Night, you'll be immersed in a murder investigation that explores a string of mysterious deaths in Burns, Alaska. The series stars Richard Armitage as Wolverine, whom you might know as Thorin Oakenshield from the Hobbit trilogy, plus a special guest appearance from comedian and podcast host Chris Gethard. To listen now, go to WolverinePodcast.com. That's WolverinePodcast.com and use the code MARVEL for a free month of Stitcher Premium. Welcome back. I'm talking to Gina Delvac, and we're talking about, right now, the part of her career that involves the creation of Call Your Girlfriend, the amazing show that she produces with hosts Amina Sow and Anne Friedman. And Gina, I want to read you something. This is from May of 2013. It was published in The Cut. I think it's from Anne. You can correct me if I'm wrong. It's about Shine Theory, and here's the thesis. We practice Shine Theory, which means we believe that when one of us shines, we all do. Our default is collaboration, not competition. We believe in giving people credit and paying people fairly. We also believe in paying ourselves, which means we accept advertising dollars and sell merchandise and tickets to our live events. We recognize that all money is dirty, but we also apply an ethical framework to our decisions and make every effort to work with businesses that consider the ethical implications of their choices, too. We believe in holding people accountable when they fall short of our expectations and invite our listeners to do the same. We work hard, relax hard, and snack hard. So that's, I mean, I think it's brilliant. I want you to tell me, are you still, it's 4 years later, is Shine Theory still possible in the rough and tumble world of podcasting right now?
Isn't Anne a beautiful writer? I just love hearing her words. So One thing to know about Shine Theory, this is something that Amina and Anne have been thinking about and really getting that term and that idea out into internet space for a long time. It predates our collaboration. So mm-hmm. in terms of, there is a literal TM on Shine Theory. I'm not a member of the, I'm not part of that USPTO mark. So
okay.
caveated, there was a little scandalo on the internet this week of someone appropriating the term. To answer your question, absolutely. That's still, I think it's still possible and it's still our intention. You know, Shine Theory is this underpinning of how Amina and Anne, and now I, from spending so much time of them, approach capitalism, which is to say that there are systems of power and oppression that we all participate in, whether we really want to or not. And in the meantime, we have to survive and we need to have money to buy snacks and rent Airbnbs for when we go on retreat. And so you do the best that you can within the confines of that system. So, for example, I'm in the middle of hiring for an associate producer for the show, which is an exciting next step for us.
Is this the first applications. Second producer you'll have on the show?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Good. Congratulations.
So it's really exciting. Thank you. And we got a boatload of applications, which I've been very slowly making my way through. And anyone who's listening, we haven't made the hire when this comes out, I'm so sorry. It's taking me a while. So that's an example where we got a note from someone who's kind of in our little podcasting world here in LA, which is a little bit different, I think, than the New York producer mm-hmm. vibe and
How?
Scene. It's a little more entertainment driven. It's more comedy. It's more, LA is just a freelancer kind of town. And so there is, it's not quite as connected. Mm-hmm. Also, weed is legal here and people have backyards. So they don't necessarily spend their nights and weekends like at networking events.
Oh,
and so you're kind of like reaching people through the internet, kind of regardless of where they live. I think that that's kind of true for all of us, but there's less of that. I'm out and I'm being seen. It's sort of like you make your stuff and it gets heard and then you kind of go on to the next project and mm-hmm. see you at the park next weekend.
Sounds very relaxing and delightful when you describe it this way.
If you can afford to live here, it can be, right?
Yeah.
Big ass caveat.
Yeah, that's right. Well, anyway, you were saying you're about to make this higher and grow.
Yeah, right. And so we got this note from an LA podcaster in our arena, in our network. And she said, I applied. I hope to work with you guys. I know I'll still be seeing you around. Whatever happens, I just want to thank you for paying a fair wage for this job. I see what you're doing and it's very meaningful.
Oh.
So this is only, we can afford and have work for about, you know, a 10 to 15 hour a week freelance type of position. And we're paying $28 an hour for that. You know, we kind of looked at the industry and said, we could try to cheap out on this because we're indie. There are people who would like to work with us because we provide opportunities for someone. But like, you know, Amina likes to say, exposure is something you die of. It is not the path to your career. So, so that's like one instance, where we really do try to the best of our ability to live our own ideals. And that does mean crediting. We realized we needed to add a credit in our, you know, end of the show for Kenesha Sneed, who did these amazing logos and designs for us way at the beginning when we had no money, when we didn't pay her. We went back and paid her later when we had some cash flow. So it is iterative and it's a process, but I think there's always room for Shine Theory is the short answer.
Well, and I wonder if you could describe, it's a highly idealistic theory about how to operate a business. And I wonder if you can, I'll step into Lex's shoes for a second. How did this show grow as a business and what were the stress points as you've grown it over these last, you know, 4 or 5 years?
Oh, so many. I mean, to begin with, we made no money for at least 18 months, just in terms of that building the audience size.
Mm-hmm.
That was ultimately sustainable for all of us because it was fun. We like working together. We didn't initially see it as a business.
How many hours a week were you spending on it then? Each of you, would you say?
Especially then, I think Amina and Anne were probably spending the couple hours each to record the show and then you know, maybe one or two more to promote it. I was doing my like marketplace level cut and much longer audio than I was working accustomed to working with at the time. And, you know, they were new hosts. And so that this was a time when I would cut, you know, two or three segments out of the final show. Now kind of it's a bit more what you see is what you get when we're not doing a more special episode. Those chatty episodes that we still put out are fairly close to the original. I don't have to do quite as much intervention work anymore. So I was spending, you know, 8 to 15 hours a week, cutting, mixing, adding music, finding music that we were stealing. We stopped stealing music. That's a terrible idea. Don't do it. No one do it.
Everybody did it at one time. Everybody did it.
We have a nice friendly arrangement with Universal Music Publishing Group now. That Robin song that you hear is our theme song is licensed. So,
good.
So other pain points were, I would say then, like figuring out how to do ads, right? I think that's kind of where you're getting, which is, you know, to say, to make these broad idealistic statements is great. And yet, you know, capitalism is what it is. And so what does it mean to make a personal endorsement when someone else is kind of writing the bullet points for you?
Right. And did you find yourselves, I should say, rejecting advertisers, or did you push back on language, or what did you do to accommodate capitalism while not giving up on what you believed was core to the brand you had built?
Luckily, in the first blush of things, there were quite a few companies who we already liked their products. You know, Glossier came on pretty early with us. I think we were one of the first podcasts they advertised with. There were all of these areas where we had a really strong feeling that our demographic, that is millennial women who were listening to the show, was not being very well served by the podcast advertiser. So there were a number of companies who kind of came in, and that they could really, you know, you think about this micro-targeting that people try and buy through Facebook. It's one of those like, hey, well, a lot of the people who listen to us are between 25 and 35 and have some disposable income, went to college. They're mostly women. If you want like a micro-targeted niche, like, hi, here we are. So we always felt like that was a compelling pitch. In terms of the interaction and mechanics with sales teams, it's gone, you know, there are ebbs and flows. I think that there are a number of companies that are like, great, young women show. Let's sell you diet stuff. Let's sell you empowertisement. Those are the ones that we tend to reject out of hand, or anything health related. We're very skeptical of sort of pseudoscience claims or of body shaming. Our show is for anyone with a body. So we're not looking to try and shame you into changing it. So there were a couple of hiccups like that, but I don't know, you can contact the ad ops team there at Midroll and see how they feel about us. I'm sure we're not the easiest show to work with because of some of those concerns. But I think that when we make a full-hearted endorsement in the ads, it shows through better. And I think that's kind of what the advertiser is looking for.
Whatever you're doing is clearly working, right? And that's, you know, as long as you feel you haven't given up on a standard or something to do it, I think most advertisers would probably be happy to have passed a high bar and feel like what they're trying to sell is actually something that people have thought about before they talk about it in a podcast. That's sort of one
I
of
would
the,
hope so.
Right. One of the virtues of successful podcast advertising is that sense of connection, and that there's some honesty in the space generally that hosts try to honor. Can I ask you how did you manage to grow the audience, and what role do you as the producer play in week on week making the number of downloads bigger than it was the previous week?
I think our initial growth, you know, we had some luck, which is that there was this really, there was like a Sahara of women's voices in podcasting. So I think that we had a lot of listeners who grabbed on immediately because, oh, holy shit, here are two women who talk the way I talk. They sound like the conversations with my friends. When I'm cooking and my hands are full and I don't have time to call my bestie, I can at least be the silent partner in this conversation between Aminatu and Anne, and learn some funky stuff that's going on in the news, or have some good talking points when I'm hanging out with my unwoke white friends. So I think that there was that. And then we had a lot of press early. Mm-hmm. And we were kind of well positioned, each of us, in our careers in terms of who was supporting us, the friends in our closer networks who were writing about the show, who got excited themselves and were inspired to start various podcasts. So there was that. And then for me, I think I have that very like responsibility to the listener of presenting as tight, like a weird mixture of tightness and looseness, right? Mm-hmm. One of the big things I've always insisted on is having a, you know what, in radio terms, we always call it a billboard. In our show, we call it the agenda of here's what you're going to hear about this week. And even if it's topical, you know, or hi, we're going to start the show by introducing ourselves, because there are, especially of the era that we started, these pods that seem to just like roll in chatting.
Right.
And there's, you know, 10 minutes before the main, you know, the entree comes out.
Yeah, you don't have to persuade me. That's something that I feel like even shows that are 10 years in should still do, because there's still so much audience to acquire out there for every show.
Exactly. Yeah. And so that's one of my things. I feel like it's my job to listen with the generosity and kindness of a friend who wants my friends to sound as good as possible and edit with that in mind, but also as the advocate for the listener to make any episode available to someone who's tuning in for the first time. And I don't know that we always hit that bar, like many shows that are kind of have developed their own in jokes and style, but it's something I'm always aiming for.
As a producer, do you chart out what's generally going to happen inside an episode, or is your job to sort of clean up and organize the taping after it happens?
I'm usually the after the fact crew. Yeah. So because Amina and Anne are so on top of the news and pop culture and have such a strong rapport with each other, and also the genesis of the show, of the stolen hours of our nights and weekends, they tend to say, oh, here's four or five things we want to talk about. And then they'll record an episode and I grab the files and post. So I do get the fun first listen, where my partner sometimes is like, ugh, I have to leave our shared office when you're editing the show because you're just sitting there giggling and I can't get my work done. So
I'm just curious too, you managed to book Hillary Clinton for an interview last year. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can only imagine if I think about the example of, for instance, Barack Obama on Mark Maron's show, the listening that happened as a result of that. How did Hillary Clinton's appearance affect your numbers? And did that – I'm curious from the podcast making stage, because we wrestle with this on various shows here. What's the impact of a huge guest, and does it stay? And I wondered if you kept the listeners from that show, or if that was just – a large-scale sampling that didn't really affect your overall growth?
You know, my suspicion, and we both know that the numbers are not as detailed as we might get in other media for podcasting. My suspicion is that that interview did a lot to really deeply re-engage people who were one-time listeners to the show.
Huh.
So the folks who had checked us out, or we were in their feed, but with the explosion of great new stuff, I think making a show week after week, it's harder to be on someone's must listen when we're coming out weekly. And here are these, you know, marquee projects that are going to be short run series. And so I think that interview was, for anyone who's ever tuned into our show, was this really exciting, in a way, also just like legitimizing of being a millennial woman, right? Of what we talk about, who we speak to, and the way, like, our vernacular matters to people, including, you know, she who would have been president. So in terms of like a concrete, like big bump, or, you know, a roller coaster of that, I can't point to it that specifically.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that it definitely was this really, like almost a culminating moment.
Well, it's a great strategy, actually, and one that hasn't really occurred to me, to use those kinds of bookings to reintroduce the show to people who were fans and maybe just got lost in the plenitude of podcasting. Do you have a strategy going forward? Every 3 months, book Hillary Clinton or a Hillary Clinton substitute?
Ideally,
is it that deliberate?
Right?
Yeah, ideally.
I would like... When is Hillary's book club coming out? I don't know if you got to listen to that interview. We got to ask her about reading Ferrante, which is one of my favorite parts about reading her memoir, is what was she doing, you know? And as you might imagine, lots of interesting intellectual type things. so No. So one of the things that we've been really focused on, especially because we had this sort of moment realizing in the Trump era that there have not only have podcasts grown so much, not only are there daily and weekly or biweekly or kind of up to the moment on demand audio in a way that there hasn't always been, that also it gets very soul crushing for the people in our audience to hear all the time in everything they turn on about the latest misdeed or the latest injustice that may have been coming out of this administration. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that we've been really focused on are these episodes that look in a kind of more like stepping back into more feature type territory about just an issue. So I hosted an episode a couple weeks ago about bisexuality, which is how I identify. Mm. Amina's been really open about her journey since her endometrial cancer diagnosis and what's been happening since she's had surgery. We're kind of really tapping into these bigger themes that persist throughout women's lives and that can happen, things that can affect you at many different ages.
Right.
And not to say that we're not going to continue doing the week to week, here's our catch up, here's our update. I think that's sort of a core part of our format. But recognizing some of the best response, maybe even more so than the Hillary episode last year, was to this episode that Amina did called Pelvic Power, that was about, you know, what happens to your body after you've had an illness or sexual trauma, getting into kind of some real shit,
right,
that usually is like not just the third glass of wine between women at happy hour, but it's in a way some of the topics we've started to cover. You know, I'm calling my mom like, you never told me the birth horror stories. You never told me what happens in menopause. And she's like, you didn't really want to know when you were 16. Well, like, there's lots of good stuff to look forward to, too.
It's really like what you're doing, to my ears, listening to you talk, is that you're going deeper into the intimacy that I think podcasting already offers people over radio, right? You're saying, hey, you've come this far. You're already a voyeur. Why don't you become part of the family and we can have a conversation that you actually couldn't listen to on a broadcast speaker in a room full of other people necessarily, or in a car with your friends. It's for that time when you're walking or when you're maybe on a treadmill or when you're trying to get to work and trying to or trying to escape work and you need some place to be.
When you have the earbuds in at work.
Right. And the other part of this that's interesting, and just reflecting on what you're saying, I think you have to keep the hosts for something that's been running for as many years as this, you know, more engaged all the time and give them room, right? And yet you as the producer have to also make sure the audience is ready to receive whatever they want to give.
And we have to give our audience hope. You know, there is this piece where our kind of like feminist teardown of the latest things happening in the news, we also have to kind of remember to continue to build up our audience, to make space for, as we added to our mission statement, every facet of women's humanity.
And is that's hard to do right now, right? How do you approach, how are we going to do that this week when you sit down?
Yeah. I mean, number one, at least in my book, is always honesty. I think that one of the things that we've always had is a certain willingness to go there. I had to unlearn a lot of production style, technique, like that same kind of forbearance I was describing of working in public radio, of you don't want to go there or we don't want to say this, of pushing that into exactly that more intimate terrain, that is this something to be revealed, to make space for feelings and ideas that people are really reticent to admit, not only to their closest, you know, friends, besties, but also to themselves. So yeah, it's so honesty helps, I think. And also kind of following our own lives and our own curiosity, not being too afraid of the potential for self-indulgence, and recognize that if there's something that we're going through, there's also, I mean, in that core superfan audience that we've built, there is such a devotion and dedication to the three of us. Like, our listeners support us the way they support their best friends. And so that kind of invitation to like come in,
I mean, I was just going to say, I think I think what constitutes what you would describe as self-involvement, actually the boundaries of that have really changed. In a time in which technology can make us feel apart from each other, there is this greater hunger to hear what you really think or to feel what you're really feeling, right? And the technology both disables that and then also allows it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. And so we try to allow that kind of forum for real talk and also goofiness, right? And also, you know, like a full spectrum from political rage to bodily harm to something hilarious to favorite memes to favorite snacks that, you know, it truly, like in a way, the idea that our whole show is modeled on how do women talk to each other? How do we support one another? What are the most kind of meaningful points of connection and moments of intimacy and how does that change over our lives? That being kind of the original model for the show is really an adaptable one too. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's great. That's what you need, right? Because you can't tell what the world will be like. I have two more questions for you. One, you did a show in the midst of your otherwise incredibly busy life, a show called Pitch Makeover that ran last year from May and June. Tell me what that show was and why you decided to do it then.
Yeah, so this is a show really conceived of, in addition to hosted by Natalia Obertino-Guerra, who is the woman behind Pipeline Angels. Her mission in really every area of her life is to boost women and people of color, non-binary femmes, a whole group of folks that she refers to as more voices, to create more access to media exposure, capital, jobs, everything. So she was someone who I was connected with through another Amina project, a listserv that she started called Tech Lady Mafia with Erie Meyer, who is now working for Code for America, who was on the original Obama digital team. And the U.S. Digital Service. And she got in touch because she had this idea and wanted to talk about a podcast. And when she filled me in, it was one of those projects that so clearly connected seemingly unrelated dots of my past, of this time working with entrepreneurs in kind of that more California, really like some peak of venture capital spending too in 2013, 2014, when I was working with Jason, into this space that was more overtly feminist, conversational. So to get to tie those things together was a really exciting opportunity. And then Natalia is just one of those people who radiates the kind of like, she's that really ultimate Malcolm Gladwell connector, you know, who wants to bring everyone into her orbit. And so, so that was just a really fun project and so cool to see what someone who's been in the business world brings to how do you launch, market, and conceive of a podcast. Like we did a launch event at a maker space that she knows in New York City. And not only did all the entrepreneurs come out, all these other businesses came out. And so it turned into this like really interesting mixture of networking and community. And then everyone, you know, and like we listened to the trailer at the event, which, you know, to me as like a shy public radio producer, I'm like, what? This is too much attention. But,
but it worked out. But was it? You liked it.
It was a really cool.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so we've been on hiatus for quite a while, but we have some more interviews and stuff in the works for that too.
Oh, that's great. All right. My last question to you is really to ask you to think about the self, the producer that you were 6 or 7 or 8 years ago. What advice do you wish someone had given you then that no one sadly gave you then that would have really helped you?
I actually did get that advice and I can pass it on.
Please do.
And it came from Shireen Meraji, who co-hosts Code Switch, and Joanne Griffith, who's now at Marketplace, who are both these incredible journalists in their own right. And I had had a bad couple of weeks, and it was in that time when I was always the temp and never getting hired. And they basically just said, "You're good. Keep going. Like, you're not wrong that there's some bullshit going on.
Right.
And don't let it stop you." And that's one of the things I try to say to any podcaster I meet who's kind of early in their journey, especially if they fit anywhere into that more voices spectrum we were just talking about, is no, people are going to think that your thing, your project is weird or bad because it's different, and it's not. Keep going. No one who's good got there without constant experimentation and an almost delusional belief in themselves. You know, we talked to Niloufer Merchant on the show a little while ago, and she has this book, The Power of Onlyness. And it's like, you really have to lean into your most you, your good you. You know your good you from your bad you.
Do you think it's getting any easier for the people you're talking about, the people that Pitch Makeover was trying to reach and help to mm-hmm. make their way in this world?
In the podcasting world or in the world in general?
Well, the world in general I can't be responsible for. I can only try to nudge the podcast world.
I think the number of total audio producer type jobs that are out there is great in terms of expanding access. I think that the entry level is still really challenging in terms of how do you get the baseline skills if you're seeking to work for an organization rather than working for yourself, you know, and the biggest thing is like, do you have access to healthcare if you need it? Can be such a big determinant for someone if they can take the risk to be a freelancer and be scrappy, or if you need to seek out a more formalized job structure. So in that way, I think, yes and no, but we're opening the paths as much as we can. I was really excited to see that Pineapple Street Fellowship for underrepresented people that just happened recently. So yeah, I think that there are people who are consciously making moves, but it's going to take a lot more disruption to really, and I think that's when the good shit is really going to happen, because we're going to hear the most important stories. We're going to hear from people who in different ways and in a new language, you know, a new level of intimacy. And I can't wait to hear kind of what everyone is going to bring to this industry.
Agreed. I can't wait to sit back and listen and see what comes, right? Before we go, I know you have a blood drive coming up that Call Your Girlfriend is leading. Do you want to tell listeners about that?
Yes, thank you for
both
the opportunity
of our
to plug. So, yes. Yeah, so as I mentioned, Amina has been dealing with this endometrial cancer diagnosis for some time, and in the course of her diagnosis and treatment, had to get quite a few blood transfusions. And so when people, friends, family, our listeners were reaching out to ask, hey, how can we help? What can we do? One of the things she said was, donate blood. And so Anne has been working hard at like future Katherine Graham, Anne Friedman, who's been organizing this nationwide blood drive. So the next opportunity to donate is March 24th in LA. And on our website, callyourgirlfriend.com/blood drive, we have all the different dates. This isn't blood that's going to Amina, but it is sort of this idea of, hey, how can we all pitch in and contribute? The San Francisco drive that we recently had, we got the stats back from the organizers, and they said, you know, there was enough blood donated to help 159 patients. So it's just one more way we sort of feel like, I think lots of people are looking to be of service, and it's hard to figure out before you find whatever your ongoing commitment is. It's hard to just drop into something.
Yeah.
But if you're eligible and able to give blood, and, you know, the rules are kind of fucked up, but if you are, go for it. It's a great way you can help.
Gina, I feel like a better person just talking to you, honestly. Thank you for doing this podcast. Where can listeners follow you online?
I'm on Twitter and Instagram at GDelvac. My DMs are open. Say what up. I'm constantly being trolled for not having a website. GinaDelvac.com is coming soon. And hopefully, maybe you're listening to this and it's already up. I can't wait to get some more Squarespace dollars for for this long time project in the works.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Well, thank you very much for doing the Wolf Den. I really appreciate your time.
Thanks so much for having me, Chris. I really appreciate it.
Well, that was the Wolf Den for this week. I'm sorry Lex couldn't be here. Kind of enjoyed just doing it myself, to be honest. I want to thank Harry Nelson and Jared O'Connell for doing what they do so magically, producing and editing and mixing and mastering and delivering and publishing this show. You should subscribe to the show, to The Wolf Den, at earwolf.com, on Stitcher, or on Apple Podcasts, and please rate and review the show. And I'd like to make a special request. We haven't had a review since January, when we got only one review. I think it was my mom who actually reviewed the show under an assumed name. Since Lex is not here and can't control what goes into this show, I want anyone who's listening now to go to Apple Podcasts, if you have time, register, and please leave a review specifically of Lex's performance on this show. I'd like to see, you know, 5 or 10, maybe all 15 of you, actually just reviewing Lex's performance, so that the next time he looks at the reviews, he'll be surprised. All right, thank you for listening very much. Thanks to Harry and Jared, and come back again, I guess? Do we have, I guess, sure, why not?
Hey, I'm Hari Kondabolu.
And I'm Ashok Kondabolu.
We're the Kondabolu Brothers, and we're excited to tell you about our new podcast on Earwolf, Kondabolu Brothers Podcast. It's a live podcast where we discuss some of the harder issues of the day.
You will be witnessing two brothers talking to each other and occasionally acknowledging the audience.
We discuss such topics as World War I, Kenan Thompson, pizza. We're excited for you to listen to Kondabolu Brothers every Thursday on Earwolf. And don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you like to listen.
This has been an Earwolf production, executive produced by Scott Aukerman, Chris Bannon, and Colin Anderson. For more information and content, visit earwolf.com.
Want to hear Earwolf pilots before anybody else? We made a podcast feed just for you. Earwolf Presents is full of great stuff, like preview episodes for upcoming shows, peeks behind the paywall, and pilots for podcasts that haven't even been made yet. It's like getting to listen in behind the scenes here at Earwolf. Starting January 21st, Earwolf Presents will have a bunch of new pilots for you, like Edgar Montplaisir's The Wokest. Catch conversations between the wokest man in the world and comedians like Risa Lechea. Also, hear upcoming pilots The Florida Cast, Wow, You're Native American Too?, This Week in Sports, and Carl Alarm all throughout the month. Let us know what you think of them with hashtag Earwolf Presents. Subscribe to Earwolf Presents to hear more great episodes from around the network and behind the paywall, like an episode of Drew Tarver's Strictly Business with Derek Contrera, or Act One of Matt Besser's punk musical, Stolen Idea. Just search for Earwolf Presents in your podcast app and subscribe so you don't miss an update.